You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
Welcome to Crossing Cultures, a forum for creating conversations and celebrating our communities. TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. You're in touch with Crossing Cultures, and I'm Julia Lynn Walker, and this is radio the way it should be heard, focusing on a very interesting discussion this morning with Abdi Sofi, who is the Community Relations, the New American Initiative Outreach Coordinator for the City of Columbus. And we are, I think, going to have a very exciting discussion. Certainly, we will be talking over each other as we already have. Yes. So far. So by way of introduction, please just share something about yourself with the audience.
Well, very good morning, Julianne. Thank you so very much for giving me the opportunity this morning. Let me first say happy Ramadan to my people out there. Again, as you said, my name is Abdi Sofi. I work for the City of Columbus Community Relations Commission, and Mayor is Michael, Michael B. Coleman, New American Initiative. I lived here in Columbus, Ohio for the past 14 years. Worked for different offices and within the legal community here in Franklin County. I worked for Common Police Court, Clerk's Office, and Franklin County Municipal Court Clerk's Office. And then joined this very good office about 3 years and a half in 2011. And since then, doing the work that we do here in community relations and the New American Initiative, dealing and engaging the community and empowering the community.
All right. So who is the New American, and what initiatives do you think are important for them?
The New Americans are, in Columbus, Ohio, we have about 130 different ethnic communities and nationalities from all over the world. Most of them came as refugees, and we have asylum seekers. We have secondary immigration people coming for different reasons. We have international students. So those are the New Americans, and as they come to Columbus and call Columbus home, the need to work with them, to engage them and empower them was realized, and the mayor was very smart when he created this initiative. Since then, we were able to accomplish great achievements and accomplishments through working with different institutions and businesses by the New American communities.
So what are some of those highlights? And maybe then by hearing the highlights, we can understand why was it important to establish this initiative?
Well, there was a disconnect. As you can imagine, when people move to new environment, a place where they don't know the language, where they don't understand the system, the creation of this initiative helped to bridge the community, to create bridge of understanding and communications. And we advocate for those communities, as you know. The principle, the city code, the city charter is based on to build a community for all, a very inclusive society. So this initiative is designed to create that inclusion, diversity and inclusion, so the people can get employment, access to business opportunities, work with on their own businesses and build their their families, so they can be part of the community, and that was the intention.
So do you work with the individuals so that they learn to speak English better, know how to work the system better, or do you work with the institutions to make the institutions more accommodating of these different groups?
We mainly work with institutions, and that's how you can achieve, anything working with. We have a variety of different institutions and disciplines. For example, social service organizations, businesses, government agencies and so on and so forth. And also the individuals, the issue of you know, conflict resolution, and when someone needs help of any sort, our doors are open, but we mainly work with those institutions to affect change and growth and help them with the capacity buildings and trainings and all different, you know, opportunities that they need.
But do you find they're resistant? Because sometimes they say, well, we're used to doing things this way, and if people come in, they need to learn how to do things our way, and so why do we have to change?
Yes, the resistance, and that's a very good question, Julianne. Yes, some institutions, you know, when people don't understand why they need to do certain things in a certain way, people will have questions, and you know, there are some ignorance issues, and you know, prejudices and biases, and you know, some barriers between some people and communities, and also some business people and owners will unintentionally create those barriers by not understanding and not being receptive to the idea of inclusion and diversity. They may have certain questions, or they will tell you that they're doing their best already. But what we do is we, without coming off accusing anyone or anything, try to, we have a lot of educational forums, lunch and learns. We have diversity trainings, best practices conference. So we use those forums and avenues to help them educate those communities and show that it's actually the best for their economic development and for their businesses, for their individual businesses, for them to be receptive to the idea to welcome us. The city of Columbus is officially a welcoming city, to welcome those different ethnic communities and incorporate with their businesses and give opportunities in terms of employment and you know, and so on and so forth. So I'm very happy to announce that Columbus, as it is the seventh smartest city, is very welcoming city. People, to compare with other cities, quite receptive to the idea. But few, you know, individuals and businesses we have seen, their numbers at least doesn't reflect what they should have been.
All right. Well, now, in a way, I see this as a carrot and a stick. You do the diversity training, you have these lunch and learns, but if people don't do it, that's sort of the carrot. You're enticing them and saying it's good for your business if you accommodate, but if they don't do it, is there a stick? Are there punitive measures that the city can use to enforce or make people do the right thing?
You know, the city government is not some kind of socialist that can enforce with the private businesses to create, you know, some kind of punishment and so on. But it's self-imposing if someone or a business owner is not a for diversity, then they have a problem on their own because they're losing business. As the demographic changes here in the city of Columbus, if I tell you a little bit between the two censuses, the 2000 and 2010, the state of Ohio lost about 1 million people. As a result, we have lost 2 congressional seats. People moved out to different states. The only county, in fact, that have gained people is Franklin County and city of Columbus. And the economic status reflects that gain as well. So for that growth, 82% of that growth was through immigration, people coming from different world, you know, Southeast Asia, Africa, you know, the former Soviet Union region, where the East Europeans people were moving in, refugees. So those people were the people who, you know, contributed to the growth of our city. So any business person would be smart enough to realize that the need to take advantage of this workforce and hire immigrants, you know, be very, very strategic about it. So I'm very hopeful. If anyone want to maintain the status quo of, you know, want to do business as they did in 1930s, 1940s, they will not go far.
Well, hopefully I would agree. But I would also, I'm sure, too, that there are there's use of proper mediation facilities that exist within different departments, as well as individuals can use the Civil Rights Commission if they want to file a complaint or feel that they've been unfairly treated. So the individual has recourse, you know, on that basis. But share with us now exactly, you know, you said Franklin County and the City of Columbus were the only ones to have grown in that 10-year period. Who are these people? You've mentioned the continents in terms of Asia and Africa, but in terms of the different communities, you know, who do we actually have represented in this 82%?
Before I answer that question, if I take you back a little bit about the potential, you know, fines and punishment, you know, punishment might not be the right word, but as you said, if some businesses and corporations are not compliant with the city code as it relates to the civil rights. I was initially talking about, the entry point where creating employment, hiring people. But when these people are hired, if someone is being discriminated by any businesses, the primary, you know, agency for the City of Columbus to enforce the civil rights is actually our office. So people come to our office to file a employment complaints, as not only employment but also housing. So the Ohio Civil Rights Commission and also the EEO, the Equal Opportunity Office, we have a good relationship with them. We have been very successful in terms of following up with those complaints. We have a mediation, conflict resolution. And if you look, you know, go to our website, crc.columbus.gov, you can find more information about the procedures and how you can file complaints with our office. Now, going back to the latest question about who are those people? People came from, and I can give you an example from the continent of Africa. I'm an African myself, proud African, by the way. We have about 54 different communities. All 54 nations in Africa are represented here in City of Columbus. The Somali community claims to be the largest, and we don't have actual number, but the estimation is about 40,000. Some people put the number about 45,000 up to 50,000. So Ghana comes second, and then Sierra Leone and Ethiopia, Senegal and Guinea and Nigeria and Eritrea, Liberia, Congo and Rwanda. Speaking of Congo, the largest refugee influx in 2014 is coming from Congo, and Columbus is receiving the large portion of that percentage. And then you have communities that are represented from all over West and East Africa in thousands. The other day I was there on the Westerfield Columbus area where kids were playing soccer. We call it football, by the way. And I was told, I asked, who are those group? And I was told they're from Benin. If you know, Benin is a small nation from West Africa. And having that conversation, I learned about, 300 or so families from Benin leave Columbus. And then Gambia and Kenya and Tanzania and Mali and Ivory Coast and Cameroon, Togo, Niger, Djibouti, Burundi, Central African Republic, Guinea-Bissau, Burkina Faso, Zimbabwe, Chad, and so on and so forth. I can count to all 54 of them. And then you have the Southeast Asians from, Pakistan, India area, Perman, Nepali refugee, Nepali Pudnis, we call it Pudnis, Nepali refugees. And this is a large group started coming in Columbus in 2011. If I share with you their story, is basically this is a group, as you can tell by their name, they have two different nations, and so many other communities have similar circumstances where one community is originally from one nation by ethnicity and language, but they live in a neighboring nation where they have their nationality. So same applies in this case, where in about 1600s, 500, 600 years ago, this community were migrant workers moved from Nepal to Bhutan, lived there, remained there forever for the next, 400 or 500 years. And then they were kicked out because the language and, they were Hindu by faith, and they were Hindi by nationality because Nepali region is close to India, and people have affiliation with, Indian ethnicity. While Bhutan is a small kingdom, monk and Buddhism system, a monarchy system. So they were clashed and they were kicked out. Now, when they came back to Nepal, they were not accepted because they didn't have a papers. There were no Nepali nationals or citizens. So they became no man's land, no man's people. They became refugees. And the U.S. State Department started resettling about 60,000 of them. To a couple of hundred came Columbus. I was very fortunate to be one of their contact with the city of Columbus, helped them address issues that they have in their housing and, substandard housing issues and problems. The city attorney, by the way, was very helpful. And other organizations, champion organizations here in the city of Columbus we have is ETSS, the Ethiopian Tawahedo Social Services, and also the resettlement agencies, Community Refugee Immigration Services, us together. So working with those stakeholders, we helped address their needs. But I wanted to tell you, Julian, that number have changed from 200 at the time, 2011, to 6,000 in 2014. So that is the speed of the demographic change that we're dealing with.
So we'll learn more about that in just a moment. The Wiggins World of Wellness host Stacy Wiggins started out his career as a licensed massage therapist. In 1994, he became the world's first African-American alpha biotinist, passionate about the knowledge of the human body, its anatomy, and physiology. You can learn and have fun and share in the wisdom of wellness, broadcast Thursdays on TalkTainmentRadio.com. So now, let's talk just briefly about how these communities increase. Clearly, there are some external factors in their own country of origin. There may be some external issues. We know right now there's a lot going on in Iraq. And, I read a piece in the New York Times over the weekend, for instance, that the U.K. has only accepted a couple of hundred people, whereas the United States has really tens of thousands. And so what is the difference? What motivates people to come to leave their country of origin and to resettle someplace else? And does that make a difference in what you have to do in terms of getting people settled?
There are a host of issues and problems that prompt people to leave their homes. And the main thing that drives people is security, safety problems, where there is a conflict and, the civil war and, the real war. In fact, in the case of Iraq and Syria and Somalia. So people will cross the border to the neighboring countries where they become refugees, and the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, will register them. And some of them, their applications are submitted to developed countries. It's not only in the U.S. that we see this, but I just came back from a trip to Europe And I visited most of European countries. I was in UK, a couple of trips. The last one, I was in Belgium and Turkey. They have large number of refugees from, you know, any each one, very small town. If I give you an example, Vilvoorde, Belgium, where we did some work, community engagement, and visited a few places. They have about 120 different nationalities and communities, and the size of that city is only 42,000. I was in Holland. There are camps, asylum seekers. We don't get a lot of asylum seekers, but in some of the European countries, people will use their boats and, you know, across the Mediterranean Sea and come to Europe. And UK is, you know, in London, the Somali community here, we're talking about only 40,000. In there, you're talking about 400,000+ in London alone. So people want to survive. If they can scramble anything, you know, they will buy an airplane ticket and the immigrants coming to the West, from New Zealand to Australia to Scandinavian and Nordic region, the European, all the European nations in Canada and U.S. This is a trend where people, but it's a good thing in many ways. As our workforce population and baby boomers retire, for us to compete with, you know, India and Brazil and China, we need to attract more people. I mean, some experts will say, well, we don't need refugees to compete with those nations. We actually need skilled workers, which brings me, we have international students that are enrolled at Ohio State University. In fact, we have about, we average about 3,000 to 5,000 students from China alone here in OSU, 1,000 from India, another 1,000+ from South Korea. What happens is we educate these people, give them the best education, but they go back. And our corporations and businesses don't have any skills. Matter of fact, most of jobs, skilled, highly skilled and technical jobs here in Central Ohio, the corporation is having a lot of conversations with other businesses and corporations. I learned they can't find it. They're searching those bright minds nationwide and they couldn't find it. Yet we send in people that we're educating because we don't have any strategy and policy to retain them. So
let's take a moment here and walk through this a bit, because and I realized as we were going through the conversation that we're using some terms and maybe intermingling them inappropriately, all right? Because isn't the broader term, it's migrants. It's people who have moved, and then there's voluntary and involuntary migration. So if it's it can be voluntary. So people would come because they want to be in Columbus, all right? Would you assist them? Does the New American Initiative assist people who voluntarily come, but they still have language issues, they still may have issues in terms of finding housing, but they're coming of their own volition?
Yeah, you're talking about, and it's not an improper. In fact, it's a secondary migrant that you're talking about. We have people that come from other states, but also those who came from outside of the nation are still immigrants. But the immigrants that comes as not refugees are very small percentage, microscopic percentage.
Okay, fine.
The main number is refugees, and there are resettlement agencies that work with. Our office still works to empower and give opportunities, create accesses and an institution building. But as part of the, we are a city government. Okay. It's not a social service organization.
Services. Exactly.
However, we, as part of the empowerment, our work to engage in those communities, we advocate them to make sure if they have businesses and organizations, those businesses and organizations are registered with the Equal Opportunity Office and certified so they can do business with Columbus, City of Columbus. Not only City of Columbus, but also other institutions. There are nonprofit organizations, tons of other organizations, the United Way of Central Ohio, the ECDI, the State of Ohio, Franklin County. So we work with those institutions to shed lights the need to help those communities.
I just want to kind of get who we're talking about correct, okay?
Yes.
Because the other thing is that even as a refugee, I'm coming in and I may be stateless. I may have had to leave my country of origin, but it doesn't mean that I've left my mind. I may actually have been middle class. I may be well educated. It's just that I'm stateless. So sometimes there's a perception that refugees are poor, undereducated or uneducated, unskilled or underskilled. And is that necessarily true?
Not at all. And there are a lot of myths and misconceptions people believe. And one of the things that we help educate people as part of our presentations and educational materials that we have is exactly what you're talking about. Most people are very highly educated. Otherwise, as in terms of, I can give you an example with the Somali community and also the Nepalese, those who are able to move on their own and have the means and the education to seek refuge actually moved out, and those are the ones that received, the accommodations from the UNHCR. Others couldn't, and as a result, you have a lot of IDBs, they call it, internally displaced people in every country that has a conflict. The case in Syria is a good example. Millions, about 6 million people are displaced, and they are still inside Syria. So those who come and cross the borders and, end up in Europe and in USA have a high level of skills and educational background. So they retained their values, their culture. They tend to educate their kids. As a result, you have a lot of Somali kids, thousands of them, doing good in, Columbus State Community College and the Ohio State Universities and other higher education institutions. But still, with the mainstream community, there are, as you put it so eloquently, issues on ignorance and bias, and they have everyone, we all have our own prejudices, but our baggage, the stereotypes, they do this and they don't do that, and, is it true that they don't pay taxes and they're all on welfare and, so on and so forth. So they create a conflict, unnecessary man-made conflict that, creates mistakes and missed opportunities. And so what we do is we try to find a solution for those issues where we create an environment for appreciation, positive message, what the people are all. So those people who have issues will have a confidence themselves to appreciate those, and so they can do business, because if you want to get if you want to succeed and a businessman or an employer, you want to understand the people that you're dealing with. You understand your constituents. You understand your employees. You want to understand your communities, and as those refugees are part of Columbus community now.
Well, we'll definitely get into that a bit more. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Check us out on WCRS FM 98.3 Wednesday and Sunday evenings. Blogs and podcasts are available. We go where you go. Download TalkTainmentRadio.com app to your cell or tablet. Radio the way it should be heard. Stay right there. TalkTainment Radio, Crossing Cultures with Abdi Sofi, up next.
Talk TalkTainmentRadio.com is the premier internet radio platform offering 40-plus talk radio-style programs professionally produced, optimized for online distribution, featuring Columbus, Ohio on-air personalities. TalkTainmentRadio.com offers listeners diverse programming options covering topics such as arts and culture, love, life and relationships, technology, religion, paranormal activities, local and national politics, women's issues, alongside health and wellness. Listeners can access their favorite TalkTainmentRadio.com programs free of cost through the website. Download the TTR app to your cell phone and you can take us wherever you go. We have programs on demand to fit your schedule through our podcast. The address is TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The SCORE Association, Service Corps of Retired Executives, was formed in 1964 as a nonprofit association dedicated to the entrepreneurial education and the formation, growth, and success of small businesses nationwide. More than 10,500 volunteer members provide individual counseling, mentoring, and business workshops for aspiring entrepreneurs and small business owners. The association is headquartered in Washington, D.C., with 389 chapters throughout the United States and its territories. For more national information, contact SCORE's Public Relations Manager at 1-800-634-0245. Again, that's SCORE's Public Relations Manager at 1-800-634-0245. This has been a public service announcement from TalkTainmentRadio.com.
Have you ever wished you could spend more time with your kids, or maybe quality time with your spouse, when you can actually have an uninterrupted conversation? Do you owe your dad a little catch-up time? Well, it's time to reconnect, and no activity can bond a family together quite like boating and fishing. I mean, think of all the great experiences you had as a kid when you went boating or fishing. Well, guess what? It's still great. Boating and fishing are the perfect opportunities for your family to get away, to talk, to laugh, to create new memories. So take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you. If you haven't been on the water in a while and you're not sure where to start, or if you just like to have some helpful tips for your next trip, please visit TakeMeFishing.org. This has been a public service of TalkTainment Radio. Radio, the way it should be heard.
I don't recycle. I mean, we can just find another planet for your kids to live on, you know?
Log on to YouGottaBeKidding.org and learn about all the ways you can recycle.
Hey, recycling's just not my thing.
Don't be that guy. Log on to YouGottaBeKidding.org.
You are now listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com and WCRS 98.3 and 102.1 FM, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com.
TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. That's radio the way it should be heard. This is Julia Lynn Walker on Crossing Cultures with Abdu Sufi, and we're talking about the New American Initiative of the City of Columbus. You may join the conversation by sending a question or comment to crossingculturestt@gmail.com or like Crossing Cultures Travel and Tours on Facebook. Crossing Cultures Travel and Tours provides a wide range of services to meet your traveling needs, whether for individuals or groups. When you're traveling for business or leisure, we can provide you with an end-to-end service that also respects Africa's contributions. So the discussion today is also looking at Africa's contributions to the city of Columbus. So what kinds of things, initiatives, are you specifically addressing as part of your work?
The African immigrant community here in Columbus and anywhere else in the world are very business-oriented people. So when they move to different new nation, they will bring their talents, their wealth. So most of them here created their own, businesses, or they found unemployment. There is an attitude of labor attachments where those people will not sit idle. They know their history. They know where they came from. They have extended families back home that they have to support. You might have heard the many wiring remittance companies wire about over $1 billion back to Somalia alone. And when you take that into account to Ethiopia and Eritrea and West African nations like Senegal and Nigeria, the number is really huge. They have businesses and services that serve not only, you know, their community, but also the wider Columbus community. You see restaurants, grocery stores, different kinds of businesses and services. Some people will ask where they get the money, how can they do that? But the thing is, it's some of them pool the money together to create, shopping malls, whatever they can find. There is a trust system. Their faith and their culture allows this. Yet again, there are some challenges that they face. Some of them don't use the mainstream credit system or do not have much relationship with any of mainstream financial industries. So they are facing, I believe they could have done it better if they have established relationship with those, financial systems. But they bring also culture. Very rich culture and ideas and wisdom and, the race and ethnicity if you go and see some of these stores, the kinds of clothing, the music, the faith-based communities, you will realize that this adds up and makes us all a better community, a very diverse community. People here have an opportunity, in certain communities and, some countries, they don't have such diversity that we have. So people will travel to learn language and get exposure of different cultures for thousands and thousands of miles on airplane tickets. But here, all you need to do is cross to the next side of town, to northeast side or west side, to find the Latino community. The Middle Eastern community, the Southeast Asian community, the African community. So we have it here, about 132 of them, and that makes Columbus a mosaic city, a global city, and something that the mayor is very happy.
Good. Well, you mentioned the businesses and people do work. Are there also similar support systems, say within the African communities, where people, really assist themselves, whether it's a business, maybe a African Chamber of Commerce, or maybe it's a African Social Service Agency? But are there some internal organizations within the groups where they provide assistance to each other?
And that's a very good question. Yes, there are a few agencies and, umbrella organizations and social service organizations and, even Chamber of Commerce. For variety of different, projects. One great example that I can use is the Ethiopian Tawihido Social Services, ETSS. This is an organization that was founded about 8-7 years ago. Was six organizations, startup, non-for-profit social service organization, and six of them were trained. They received a seed training money from the United Way and Columbus Foundation. And as a result, ETSS now is, have an offices on the west side, on the east side, northeast side, about four or five different offices. And they have a programs, youth summit, summer programs, programs that are designed for older people, for ESL programs, and host of projects going on at their offices, regardless of which you visit, is very busy and helping the communities and empowering the youth. And they bring speakers. They have a new American summit coming up. They have the youth summit, the new American youth summit, sometime this September. You have also other organizations, business organizations, and we're talking about multi-million-dollar businesses here owned by new American communities. the Latina community, the African community, the Middle Eastern and Southeast Asian community. And
let me jump in there, because earlier we talked a bit about, you know, interactions between a business owner and a new American. But now I'm wondering about perhaps interactions between new American businesses and the communities that they're in. Because sometimes, you know, there's discussion about particular people having business, having taken over certain businesses in certain communities, and it being appropriate or inappropriate. And sometimes there's some concern that, you know, and I know I'm specifically, you know, South Koreans taking over the mom and pop stores, you know, in the traditional African-American communities. And I know that that's sometimes an issue or perceived as an issue. Or, you know, is that something that it exists, or is that sort of one of those urban myths?
It's a little bit of both. You know, human beings in nature don't like any change. When you see a new person, new things are going on, people will have some questions. Now, the question is if those questions are exaggerated and you know, end up becoming unreasonable, you know, attitudes and so on and so forth. But mainly those businesses serve in the new American community and the mainstream community equally, because the services and products they serve is very much needed. If people in our American society, people are very, you know, independent. You know, people think independently, and when they see the services and products they need, people will use them regardless of who owns it. The issue of resistance, or that little prejudice, exists. But here in Central Ohio, the actual racism and you know that hatred is not there. But that little resistance is there, and it's a barrier that we can bring it down together with the community through education, highlighting those issues and you know, the benefits.
Yeah.
Speaking of the benefits of the business, according to the U.S. Small Business Administration, immigrants are found to have a higher startup business and business ownership, formation of new businesses, higher rate than any other community in the U.S. Roughly 1 out of 10 immigrants own a business, and they have a less debt because people don't abuse credit cards. Some of them don't even need any credit system. They pull money together and create a corporation. An immigrant owned business generates, you know, about $776 billion in revenue in last year alone. So they employ 4.7 million people. This is just to give you a little example. Here in Columbus, same applies. We have about 11 or so percent of immigrants here live in Columbus, but their businesses, their startup businesses account about 12.5%. That's higher rate than, you know, than their actual proportions of in percentage. So on top of the cultures and the things we talked about, and if they're not facing those challenges in the credit system and the culture that they have, self-imposed issues, or otherwise, other challenges and obstacles, they can still do better by generating more businesses and more money for the economy and for the city of Columbus.
Okay, so that there's a definite value add in terms of these communities. So TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. That's radio the way it should be heard. This is Julia Lynn Walker on Crossing Cultures, and we're talking about the New American Initiative. Now, sir, if we just think about, you know, we've talked about some of these the myths, if you will, and we talk about the look specifically at the African communities in Columbus. What would you say might be, you know, the top three myths that you've heard when you're out talking with people, or What are the three facts that you'd like to share with us so that, you know, people understand exactly what's happening, like you've just done with the size of the business investment and contribution overall?
So there are, you know, different types of myths and misconceptions that create difficulties and, you know, conflicts. There are generational kind of issues, you know, terminology issues. Some people don't even understand. I was looking at 10 TV coverage where the news was a Somalian neighborhood. So there's two problems with that. First, they don't call themselves Somalian. It's like calling now an Americanos or Americanish, just for lack of, you know, any coherent, you know, knowledge of how to pronounce things. Like Nepalian. There is no such thing as Nepalian. There are Nepalese. There are Somalis. There is no such thing as Somalians. So people are having a hard time of who to call what and what the names. So if you can get it wrong, the first thing with the name, so there, the chances are a lot of other things that you can get it wrong. And those other things include, you know, misconceptions and the stereotypes. And I was asked a question by a very educated gentleman who has a leadership position. And the question was, hey, Abdi, I know I should know this, but is it true that Somalis don't pay taxes? They don't pay tax? I mean, they and I'm one of those people who, you know, always receptive, and I always ask people, ask questions. So, you know, there's no stupid questions, so you can get. But somehow I was upset about the question because I didn't expect it from him. Very educated individual, and the common sense. You are a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident or here legally. Is it really up to you to decide whether you pay taxes or not? Do you have that option? Can you opt out and say, oh no, Uncle Sam, I'm sorry. I am not, you know, no taxes. I'm not going to pay the taxes. Do you really have that luxury? Can anybody do that? But yet, the myths and misconceptions that certain communities don't pay taxes is out there. People believe, you know, Somalis or, you know, immigrants and refugees don't pay taxes. It's not true. Money were given away by the government to these communities. There is no such thing. They're all on welfare. In fact, the contrary is the truth. And people don't know their interest. They don't know what's good for them. They don't understand because they're already guarded, and that's a defense system, you know, kicks in. Oh, them versus us, that kind of attitude, finger pointing. So those are the issues.